Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. I'm your host, Scott Colnut, and with me today is Brenna Lowry, Head of Marketing at Doist. And we're going to be talking about the reality of word of mouth marketing. And a little bit of context for you, Brenna. So whenever we have guests on our podcast, I kind of always let our team know in the background what's going on, who's going to be on the podcast. And Brenna, in front of you, might see some show notes from Nay Jackson, our Head of Measurement and Insight.
Okay.
And so we have Todoist fans in our team, but Nay
okay,
Jackson
I was wondering.
Is more than a fan. So Nay Jackson is an advocate. So I knew that Nay's an advocate for Todoist. She's used it for a long time. And I was saying to Nay, look, I'm going to be speaking to Brenna. Is there anything that you want me to ask?
Yeah.
And her reaction, and for our listeners, Nay's reaction was, oh my God. Firstly, Nay's first question was, do they need help from an agency? Oh, nice one, Nay. Can I get their autograph? Bit of a weird request, but yeah, I'm sure that can be figured out. Can I meet them? Maybe one day that will work out. And Nay says, the last two are jokes, but I'm having a bit of a fangirl moment. I love Todoist. So I had to share that and get that in there for Nay, because
she
really does beat the Todoist drum. It's an advocate for you and our team.
That's
and
awesome. It's funny. That's because perfect segue to talk about word of mouth marketing, I guess.
Wow, actually, yeah, I didn't really think about that, but it's the perfect transition into the topic that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned in the intro there, you are the head of marketing at Doist, and you've been there throughout Doist's journey. Notably for our podcast listeners, a lot of our podcast listeners will probably be familiar with Todoist and your more recent product now, which is Twist. And do you want to give yourself a bit of an introduction for our listeners so they can understand more about you and what you do on the day-to-day at Doist?
Sure. Yeah. So thank you, Scott, so much for having me. I'm super excited to talk about marketing today. So like you mentioned, I am the head of marketing at Doist. We are a software development company. We're fully remote, always have been, always will be. And our two products that we have developed, the first is Todoist, which is a pretty popular productivity app for individuals and groups of people, small businesses. We have about 25 million users these days of Todoist all around the world. And then in 2007, we created a new team communication software called Twist. And that tries to cater mostly to remote teams like us who have to work across a lot of time zones and therefore have to rely more on asynchronous communication.
And then you touched on one key metric there, which was 25 million global users. And it's funny, again, when I'm researching product, I know about Todoist anyway, I've been familiar with your product for a long time, but I still wasn't really aware of the number of users. And that blew my mind when I saw the 25 million. But what blew my mind even more is when you look at, you're doing your research and I'm looking at how many users does this product have. And back in 2015 or 16, I came across articles that was estimating, 5 million users, 7 million users. And then all of a sudden it's 2021 and I see the 25 million figures. And I'm thinking, what witchcraft is going on over at Doist? What are you doing to increase by that amount in that amount of time? So if you maybe, that's a good starting point just to talk that journey, I imagine has been an interesting one, a fun one, a difficult one, but you've been there through it throughout. So I know that you cover quite a broad role at Doist, including HR, remote working, website copy, and we'll probably talk about all of those throughout. But in your own words, do you want to describe maybe some your journey so far and any pivotal Sure. moments there have been?
Yeah. So I started out working with Amir, the founder of Doist, back in 2012. I had met Amir in 2010 or 2011. We were both living in Santiago, Chile at the time. And I had sort of a small PR agency for tech startups, like in the Latin American tech scene. And Amir was actually one of my clients at the time. And they were gearing up. I think there were only four or five other people on the team at the time, and they were gearing up to launch Todoist's first mobile apps, which those launched in, I think it was November of 2012. It feels funny to think about that because it was just, looking back, it feels like we didn't really know what we were doing. You know, I'm having this flashback of like writing a press release, and you know, things have changed pretty drastically in the last 8 or 9 years. But yeah, so I started out working on a freelance basis with Amir and Alan, who is the COO of Doist today. He was also living in Santiago at the time. And, you know, Todoist started growing a lot very organically once we launched the mobile apps for iOS and Android. And I just started taking it on more and more work and responsibilities with the team, and ultimately became like a legit full-time employee in 2014, and have been building the marketing team ever since. But, you know, we were a really small team for quite a long time. Up until about 2015, we were still around like 30, 35 people. Today, we're just approaching the 100 mark. But, you know, so we were a very small team for a long time. So like you mentioned, I had to wear a lot of different hats along the way. I was kind of an HR role at one point, writing the blog, doing the social media, writing the app copy, like doing PR, a little bit of everything. So yeah, it has been a very interesting journey, I'm not going to lie.
And is your role still as broad today?
No. So now, we have expanded the team. So we have, we have an actual HR department now. And we have like a larger marketing team. I have 6 direct reports, for example. I have 2 people working on content, 1 social media manager, 2 people in product marketing, and 1 person who works on growth and product growth. So yeah, we've kind of consolidated things and specialized roles a lot more the last few years.
Mm. And we'll talk about this in a moment, but I've got a note in front of me that says kind of when you first started out in those early years, you're around 5 employees. Yeah. And then over time, that's grown to about 88 employees in over 30 countries. And the other key part of that, which I think you touched on at the beginning, is that you're remote first. So you're a fully remote team, which is even the more impressive. And I'm sure we'll get into that as well. Even though you have a marketing team and people to work with and take on that responsibility, for the size of the user base, the team still doesn't seem that big. So, I mean, you broke it down there, but can you remind me how many people do you have in your marketing team at this moment?
Yeah. And so we have 2 people who work on content marketing, 1 person who oversees social and community. We have 2 product marketers and 1 sort of growth marketer / product growth person. And mind you, this isn't just for Todoist. We oversee 3 brands and 2 products. So yeah, we are pretty nimble, I guess.
And I am interested to know, but sometimes when you're starting out in a role, in a startup, you're wearing different hats. It's exciting. You're learning a lot on the job. And then when that user base increases, when you've got the opportunity to bring in a team, you've got to find your own way of working again. You've got to find your vision. And I'm curious to know what are the pros and cons of that journey that you've been through personally? So do you ever miss those days of wearing all those different hats? Do you ever look back fondly on it? And where are you at today?
Well, I love this question, Scott, honestly, because we talk about this a lot on our team, this concept of giving away your Legos. I'm not sure how familiar people are with this, but I've had to give away a lot of my Legos along the journey, and some have been easier than others to give away, that's for sure. But I have struggled in the past with that. There was, I particularly enjoyed the product marketing work, especially because that's a role where you get to interact with a lot of different people in the company, the software engineers, the help team, the marketing team. And so I really enjoyed doing that work. And when I finally gave away that Lego, it was hard for me. Like it took me quite a long time to do that. But also once I did, I saw this area just totally take off. And I realized that I had been, you know, myself holding that, that marketing work back because I was kind of hoarding this Lego and I should have given it away beforehand. But, yeah, it's really great. I think because on one hand, like I do have a lot of real firsthand experience in most of the areas that my team members work in. So like you mentioned, and we've discussed, our team is really small. And so I still do quite a bit of individual contributor work myself. And we have a pretty great dynamic on the team where if, you know, somebody needs help or, you know, I need to step in at some point, I'm not like totally fumbling around in the dark usually. But I think having that like wider range of context and experience has been really helpful for me personally.
I really like that idea of either giving away your Lego or not giving away your Lego, depending on how you look at it. The way I'm visualizing it as you're talking is that you have all of this Lego and it's fun. You know what you can create out of that Lego, but you never know if you give that to another person and come back in 6 months' time what they've created out of it. You know, you might have created the DeLorean and they've created the T-Rex, and it's funny, you just never know what you're going to get back. And that's the exciting part about giving away your Lego, I think.
Exactly.
And I'm interested in this, the word of mouth part. So you've grown in this time, you've grown with a small team. And one of the key things that stood out to me that I've seen through my research and in preparation for the podcast is that this is the first year, and I don't know whether that is 2021 or 2020, but you've run any paid advertising, which means that everything that you've done, I assume, has been in-house. I don't, and maybe you can speak on this a bit, I'm not too sure if that includes any agencies that have supported you with that. So I'm interested to know, I appreciate this is going to be a really broad question and one we might have to break down a bit, but along that journey so far, are there any pivotal strategies, any particular tactics that stand out, or any particular turning points or moments that you think have been the major contributors to such exponential growth?
Yeah, sure. We've had a lot along the way. You know, Todoist has been on the market for about 10 years now. And one thing I haven't mentioned yet is that we are also a very untraditional company in that we have never raised any VC funds. So we have been profitable since day one, since Amir started working on this, like in his college dorm room back in 2007. So we have had to really utilize our resources the best we can because we don't have people like throwing money at us. our wallet is not unlimited. So word of mouth has been huge for us along the way. And one example that I think is really just a picture perfect example of how Todoist has worked and grown over the years is this concept of crossing the chasm. It's a really wonderful book. If you're readers, I'm not sure how many people have read it, but basically Todoist started out as, you know, like a very niche app. This was still 2009, 2010. Like not everybody had mobile phones. It just wasn't as ubiquitous to have these digital tools like at your fingertips all day. So I think a huge influential factor in that was Amir's personal development blog. Like he was very active. He was a very active blogger. And I think just even this like such small niche of people who were always reading his blog and learning about Todoist and learning about the technologies that he was coding in, that I think was like this little ember of fire that just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, Todoist has gone from like being small and tiny and like very technical to being like very mainstream at this point. And word of mouth has definitely played a huge role in that because like we haven't had money to throw into Google ads or Facebook ads or things like that. And we don't have a sales team. So I think there's like thinking about the pivotal moments, you know, launching the mobile apps back in 2012 was a big deal. And then we just kind of went on like a steady stream of product improvements and product launches. Like we've always been product-led company. So along the way, I was tasked personally with doing a lot of PR every time we had a product update. So I think that played a huge role as well. A lot of journalists used Todoist, and for that, like, was really instrumental for us because a lot of journalists then have been like really keen to publish our updates, and that has, I think, helped our growth a lot as well.
There's a few questions that come to mind there. So I guess the first, and actually more so statements or insights that I've pulled there than questions, but the first seems to be that from Amir's early days, it's that core customer base. You build the loyalty into the product. You build the advocacy into the product from that initial user base. So in a way, Todoist owes a lot to those initial users and that loyal kind of group of fans from the beginning. That's one thing that stands out to me. And we might even come on to talk to this in a moment. But the other thing that stands out to me is it's very much if you have a great product and you focus on the product first mentality, then the marketing falls into place a lot easier because you're probably enthusiastic and happy and you know you have something of worth to go and speak to journalists about.
Right. Yeah. So one of our first, this was before I started working with Amir, but I remember, I think it was in 2010. It feels like it's so long ago. I guess it is. But there was a TechCrunch article that came out about Todoist was like the first to-do list app, I believe, that was running on HTML5. Right. and that kind of like started this tiny little snowball also. And from there, like we just started gaining like these, you know, users that are more and more technical savvy. And this was at a time when technology was becoming a much bigger part of our lives. And part of that, I think, like, you know, Amir has a background as a software developer himself. So I feel like he, you know, anticipated a lot of these features that this demographic of users would really appreciate. For example, like we are one of the first to-do list app that came out with natural language processing. So that means like you can just type into Todoist like gather invoices every third Thursday from April 1st to November 5th, and it will parse that all out for you and create the task. So it's very powerful. And then I think another thing that led to our growth also was being available on so many different platforms. At the time, we had a lot of competitors who were just, you know, had a web app, for example, or just were available on the Apple ecosystem, whereas we always operated under the mentality that like people need to add tasks wherever they are. So we were really mindful about creating apps and extensions for like all the different platforms for people to use.
So what I am interested in part of this discussion though, in terms of pivotal moments, is I know that you think strongly about writing your own playbook. That's come up in research, and I'm keen to know what that means to you and your advice for other marketers and other people that you think are in similar positions.
Yeah, sure. So we, as a company, and just I think as Doisters in general, like we hire for people, like we hire people who, you know, are very critical thinkers because we have to operate under first principles. Like I think we are definitely writing our own playbook. Like I mentioned, we're a completely remote team. We always have been. We've never raised any VC funds. So this puts us in a very small category of companies that just doesn't have a lot of like powerful industry leaders, I think, to follow. And one mentality that I've always appreciated about our product team is that like nobody ever really cared about our competitors, which is kind of probably sounds crazy, but you know, because people, I think marketers spend so much time obsessing over like the specific copy of like all of their landing page, or like, you know, you can really go down so many rabbit holes comparing yourself to yourself to your competitors. And that's just something that we never did. We were never really interested in at all. And at the time, there were so many to-do list competitors on the market, and they've kind of been like dropping off along the way, which I think has contributed to our growth in the last few years. But we've always just operated, I think, a lot on our gut feelings. And some of that has worked out for us well, and other times it hasn't worked out so well. But we'd never focused on our competitors or what new features they were doing, or, you know, how they were marketing their product. We always just kind of kept our heads down and did what we thought was right. And part of that, I think, is putting empathy at the center of all of our marketing. People download a to-do list app usually because they have some big event that's happening in their life. They're getting married, maybe having a kid, starting a new job, a new semester at school. So really, like, putting yourself in the shoes of your user, I think, is so much more effective than paying attention to your competitors.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I love that message, by the way, and I haven't spoken about that so much on this podcast, but that is one thing that I feel strongly about too. And I also think it's just, I kind of get frustrated with it a little bit, but at the same time, I can let it go. Is it just, I hate to see marketers waste time on what competitors are doing. Ultimately, it often is useless. So while I think that it can be helpful to, I think it can be helpful to be inspired by competitors. That's never a bad thing, I don't think. I think that's quite healthy. And I think to give credit to competitors or people that are in your industry that are doing amazing things, like, I think that can be, that's a really healthy place to get to. But to worry about competitors and what they're doing, I think, like you said, you've got to focus on yourself and to grow your company. That's something that you've got to let go. And one thing that's a kind of culture related question that comes to mind is that despite everything that I've just said and everything that you've just said, you talked a lot there about going with your gut feeling, experimentation, which is ultimately, I think that's a dream for marketers to hear. That sounds like a great culture, but that also can only really happen with the right leadership and the right hiring. So I'm really interested to know, it sounds like another pivotal aspect of this growth early on was your relationship with Amir and maybe other members of the early team. So have you all grown together? Is there anything that you can pinpoint to? Anything that you do practically, things that come to mind for me? Are there any principles or values that you have a team that you started to share early on? Is there any interesting way in which you share feedback with each other? Anything that stands out to you?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. And, you know, for us, leadership has been so important. Amir is a founder. He is like, and I asked him this in our last one-on-one, like, how do you make time? You know, you have two kids, you play soccer on the side, like, you run this company, you do development, and yet you still find so much time for learning. Like, how do you even manage to do all of this? So one thing I have always really looked up to Amir for is like his thirst for knowledge and just like never stop learning. And this has become one of our company's core values, which is called mastery. Like, you care really deeply about what you're doing. You're continuously learning and pushing yourself to the limits of your own abilities. So that has always been really embedded in our culture. And it's definitely something that we hire for. Just because as a small team, like, you can't just sit on your laurels and be like, you know, I don't have one person on the team that is like only overseeing Google Ads, for example, like these giant companies that have giant marketing teams. Like, people have to be able to do like a pretty wide breadth of tasks, and they have to have a pretty wide breadth of skills. So learning is a huge part of that, and something that we have always invested in as well as a company. For example, everybody at Doist is allotted 1 month per year to work on a personal project, which is really cool. Some of the projects that have come out of this initiative have been really great. And some of them have, you know, been added to the products themselves and have had a pretty big impact on our apps. So it's something that we're always optimizing for and pushing people. And we have, you know, channels in our Twist, for example, like learning and inspiration, where we share interesting articles and podcasts, videos and things like that. So it's really a very, very deep part of our company culture.
That's really inspiring to hear. It's put a smile on my face. And that's the kind of a culture that you imagine. And I think sometimes, again, what Todoist in particular, I don't know so much about Twist personally, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But from Todoist, from your marketing, you would think that the culture that you've just described is what happens behind the scenes. And it's always nice to know when that expectation matches the reality. So thanks for sharing some of those insights there. You talked or noted Google Ads as you were speaking there. And going back to my earlier question, I talked about that you hadn't spent money on paid advertising for a long time. And everything that you've just described explains why you've not needed to, which is amazing. But I am curious about why now is the time that Doist have started to invest in paid advertising, if you could maybe elaborate on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great segue, because speaking of learning, like last year in 2019, throughout kind of like the first half of 2020, I personally felt slightly disadvantaged, because I'm like a head of marketing, you know, at this company, and I have no experience doing performance marketing at all. So I felt like I needed to learn about this, and I had the support and bandwidth to take it upon myself to figure it out. So I was really curious, like learning just how this works and like the basics, you know, how do you set up a campaign? Like, what do you optimize for? How do we connect the dots between our products? And so I sort of took on this small project of just iterating on some Google Ads, and spent more and more time on that, and kind of discovered that it was actually a profitable acquisition channel for us. It was kind of happenstance, I suppose. So, and it turns out we, around that time where I was like, you know, doing the math and figuring out like this could be a viable acquisition channel for us, we hired a new person on our business development team who coincidentally like had a ton of experience in performance marketing. And he is now, quote unquote, taking this project over the finish line and really investing a lot into this and, you know, putting his expertise at work. And now we're ramping up a lot of more spending in 2021. And yeah, I'm interested to see how this will work out. Like, we have never paid any attention to paid advertising. So it was fun to learn about, but I'm really glad that there's somebody on the team now who can really sink their teeth into it.
There's something interesting about what you're saying, and do correct me if I'm wrong or making some wrong assumptions here, but I'm kind of building a narrative, because you talked about the culture of experimentation from the beginning, going with your gut feeling, this instinctiveness, that kind of approach to marketing. And I guess it would be easy when you're in the position you're in as Todoist in particular, and you have that big user base, to think, right, now's the time to launch into paid advertising or performance marketing. Maybe we should outsource that to an agency. But instead, you've actually in the spirit of your culture, in the spirit of your values, that's something you've taken on yourself and you've grown in-house. I'm interested to know whether that was a conscious decision, or have I described something accurate there? And it's the spirit of the culture that led to your decision as opposed to anything else.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Hmm. We, as another aside, we externalize like very little. A lot of, we do pretty much everything in-house. We're very, honestly, like quite protective of our brand. You know, it's very important to us that things are done meticulously and properly, and our brand is our baby, basically. So, yeah, it's hard to give away those Legos to an external agency. Like, I think we work with a PR agency, and we work with a WordPress agency that manages the technology of our blog, and that's it. But like what you were saying is one trend that I have noticed at Doist is like people will start, you know, have this curiosity and start learning about something and kind of like get it off the ground. And then once it gets to a point when we figure out like, oh, this is actually working out really well, somebody else will sort of take it over. Somebody else that might have more experience, or we might even hire somebody else. For example, like we have done videos in-house forever, basically. And now this year we're planning to hire a video producer, just because we get to a point where we just don't have the bandwidth to do it anymore. And, you know, people on the team, on the marketing team, on the design team have had the chance to experiment and learn about this, but to really do that well, you have to dedicate more resources to that. So it's an interesting sort of like phenomenon I think we have at Doist, but I find it super valuable because it gives people the chance to learn new skills and to experiment and find what works and find what doesn't, and then invest in what is working.
There's one thing that stands out that I'd assume as well, and again, do correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're going through that process of you're learning, let's say, for example, the video production side of things. So you're producing videos in-house, you're all experimenting, and it gets to a point where you think, hey, we're doing this regularly now. Maybe we need to actually hire in-house for this thing. Well, at that point, you've got a much better understanding of the type of person that you need to hire for, because you're also aware of what you've been doing, what that job role needs to be, and also of the skills and limitations that you have within your existing team. So it makes it much easier to know what to hire for, I'd assume.
Yeah, it took me about like 10 minutes to write this video producer job description. I think that's a great point. And it also, I think it helps the onboarding of the person if you choose to hire somebody. Like, you know, you and your team are probably pretty entrenched in doing this. And, you know, this will help kind of tether this new hire to the ground. And I think it will help them get up to speed a lot faster and, you know, hit the ground running on the tasks that they need to do.
So it's one thing to build this culture that we've discussed for any business. Like, that's an amazing achievement. But to do it remote first is something that blows my mind, because the assumption here, particularly for creative environments, particularly for product-based environments, is you have this vision of people working together, physically together, post-it notes on whiteboards or whatever it is. You know, you have that kind of vision when you think about this. And I read regularly, and I've actually struggled with it myself, this aspect, particularly over this last year or so, as we're all working from home and we're not in the same office anymore, of how to encourage a culture of creativity through remote working. And I'm interested to know, how have you created that culture remotely? So is there anything that you can point to specifically that you do to help create that remote culture?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. Yeah. And we have never, honestly, we've never had the luxury of, you know, all sitting in the same office together. But like we talked about before, you know, learning and curiosity and mastery are such an important part of our culture that like the people that we hire just tend to be very curious and driven people themselves. Mm. So I think that plays a big role, like just from the baseline of things. You know, if that's something that you intentionally hire for, then that's a culture that you're going to be able to develop a lot easier. But I think another important aspect of fostering creativity remotely is having like a very transparent company culture as well. And like, you know, having this sort of the best idea wins mentality. Like, we use Twist, right, to do all of our team communication. All of our channels are open. Basically, I think there's like, you know, 10 of 250 that are private, but that means that anybody can go in and like look at conversations that are happening and can jump in to the discussion and share their viewpoint or share an idea. So we really try and like not limit people in terms of the information that they have access to. And I think this really allows people to have a great grasp on what's going on and what's going to happen in the future and how they can play a role in that. And also knowing that like their voice, they're never going to be shot down. You know, everybody has the same exact footing as like the CXO teams to everybody else on the team. And this is something that we have tried really hard to maintain as we've grown as a company. And I think it has contributed to our creativity and the way we develop products. Like anybody can share an idea or start a new project. And that has been super, yeah, beneficial for us.
Well, that's an interesting transition into Twist, which is, I'm interested to know the origin story of Twist and yeah. how that came about within your business. So it sounds like from what you're saying that Twist started out as kind of an internal project of some sort and kind of grew bigger. Is that the case? How did it start out?
Yeah. So we, as I mentioned earlier in our discussion, I think it was around 2015 or so, we were about 30 different people on the team. Yep. And at that point, we were actually using a different app that Amir had developed called WeDoist, which no longer exists. But we just got to a point where we were growing and looking at other tools on the market. And that's when we discovered this like small app called Slack. That was just, it was pretty brand new. And we ported everybody onto Slack. And it was really fun at first because it gave us like a new sense of closeness. And this was also just right around the time that we had our very first in-person company retreat. So these two like forces of in-person, like everybody meeting each other for the first time, and then like a more open and inviting communication channel, I think really helped our culture flourish. But at the same time, things started to like the honeymoon with Slack did not last long for us because we've always spanned so many different time zones. And me particularly, I'm in Seattle in the Pacific time zone, and many of my coworkers are in Europe. So like I would wake up to just this barrage of incoherent conversations and messages and GIFs and God knows what else, and trying to like decipher through, and you know, decisions are already being made, and I'm still asleep. And we realized pretty quickly that that was not going to help us build the culture that we wanted to build. We have always had a very strong mentality of work-life balance and not being connected all the time. Like we are very mindful about developing our apps for focus instead of engagement. Like we don't want people spending a lot of time in Twist or Todoist. So this was like very detrimental to our company culture. And from there, we just decided to create our own app based on our own needs. And we figured like, you know, we're ahead of the curve in terms of remote work, but hopefully it will catch on and other teams will see the value in this tool as well. And that's how Twist was born. And one day to the next, we cut off Slack cold turkey and haven't looked back since.
Amazing. I love that story. And again, it speaks true to the culture of experimentation that you were talking about earlier. I'm going to go back to close out this podcast, back to Todoist. Okay. But I thought that story about Twist was going to be interesting for our listeners. Yeah. And with Todoist, I know we talked about the user base of 25 million and just how it's hard to kind of get your mind around those figures. And I was interested in a couple of areas when you're dealing with that number of users. The first that I'm interested to know is when you have that we talk about it in marketing in terms of retention, but I'm particularly interested to know surprising and delighting customers. So how do you surprise and delight customers when you have that many? What's your goal in terms of retention and keeping customers engaged?
It's funny, Scott, because I feel like you have some sort of window into my brain. This is actually a goal for us coming into like sort of the next 5 years of how we can increase our word of mouth and how we can embed delight into our apps and into our marketing. And it's a really fun mentality to live in, like thinking of how we can make people happy. And that's a lot of the work there has to be done on the product side. But in terms of marketing, some things that we're doing, like, for example, ensuring that the content that we produce is very useful for people and just helps them live better lives, basically going back to that sense of empathy that we try and embed in all of the marketing that we do. And one aspect of Todoist that we have is called Todoist Karma. And essentially, like, it gives you points for doing actions in Todoist, completing tasks, using labels, reminders, and things like that. And we've always seen the power of this and people are really enthusiastic about it, but we just honestly like never really had the bandwidth to dedicate much effort to making this like an engaging or delightful system. So that's something that we've been working on. Like, we created some swag for the first time and like are, you know, sending t-shirts and mugs to people who reach these higher levels of the Todoist Karma system. So again, like, we are having to look for ways that are sustainable for us to do that as a small company. But yeah, delighting users at scale is one of our biggest goals for the next 5 years. So I guess people have to stay tuned to see what we can cook up.
On that note, so my last question, I have a couple of questions left. One is about Todoist and one's about something I think entirely differently, but we'll get to that in a moment. So my last question about Todoist and just speaking on the future, I know myself just as a fan of using software and just as a geek, I'm always interested to know what the next thing is, what the next feature is. And I know you must get this question a lot, but I am curious to know, you've shared some amazing goals there as you were talking, but particularly when it comes to either marketing or either the product features and function, is there anything that our listeners and Todoist fans should be looking out for?
Yeah, so we had a very active 2020. People probably noticed, those are familiar with Todoist. We released a ton of new features in the app, and I think things will be kind of quiet on the Todoist front for the first half or so of this year, 2021. We are sort of doing a lot of internal back-end work that will power the features that we plan to work on in the near future. And we are setting our sights on making Todoist easier to use for teams. Like, we released this Todoist business plan or, you know, offering in 2015, and honestly, like, haven't gone back and updated it or done anything with it. It's very much our neglected child. So we are going to be working on that this year. And it's tough, right? Because we have two products and a team of 100 people. So we're also doing some really exciting things on the Twist side as well. So I encourage people to stay tuned to both of the products. It kind of like seesaws, you know, sometimes Twist will have a lot of product updates and then Todoist and going back and forth like that.
That's brilliant. Well, thanks for sharing that insight as well. And my final question before we close out today's episode is, I spotted something, I think it was on your Twitter page, about the asynchronous community or movement. And I was like, what is this? I've never heard of this before, but it looked interesting. And so I'm just curious to know more. I appreciate this might be a whole other episode. So if there's anything that you can set me off on the path to understand what this is all about.
Sure. No, actually, I think people will have a pretty good context going into this question, Scott, because this is actually the personal project that I did last year. I spent a month creating a website and a community of people and companies who work asynchronously. So basically this concept of, like, you know, working on your own time and like not responding to messages immediately and giving yourself enough time in the day to do deep work and focus and not be distracted. Very much like the mentality of Twist as opposed to Slack. So this was my personal project that I was working on last summer. And there's a pretty big appetite for it. I was very surprised. A lot of really reputable companies came on board, like GitLab and Buffer and Zapier. And I kind of got in over my head. I just wanted to create like this sort of little thing and experiment with, you know, creating a website from scratch in Webflow. And it's kind of ballooning to be something bigger than what I had expected it to be. But yeah, I'm one of my goals is to figure out what to do with this community, and I'm not quite sure. So yeah, we'll see about that.
Well, it's interesting. I said we could probably talk about that for a long time, and I won't speak on this for too long. But it's so interesting because, particularly in creative industries, and I can speak to this from a marketing front, is that there are so many distractions. And I think we all know that we do our best work when we're at our most comfortable, at our most relaxed, when we feel in control of our time. And it's very easy to not feel that way in marketing, in creative industries. So it doesn't surprise me so much that you've seen so much interest in that, because I think there are a lot of people out there that struggle with that aspect of feeling like they're not in control of their own day.
Yeah.
And how that impacts their final product, whatever art it is that they're trying to give to the world, whatever product or service or they're trying to deliver to the world, it's all impacted when you don't feel in control of your time. So I think that's really interesting. I look forward to seeing what you do with that community. And yeah, I think there's a need for that awareness, because there are a lot of great marketers out there who can probably deliver even better work.
Yeah.
If they had a community like that that they were a part of, and there was a greater awareness of what that movement's all about. So thanks for creating that, and I look forward to seeing what you do for that.
We'll see. To be determined. Stay tuned, everybody.
To be determined. And before I let you go, do you want to let our listeners know where they can find out more about you, Doist, Todoist, Twist, and any other projects you're a part of?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you again, Scott, so much for having me. Your questions were really interesting, and I really enjoyed chatting about all this stuff. Yeah, people can find me on Twitter. I'm at Brenna, BrennaKL. Otherwise, you can learn about Todoist and Twist and Doist on our website, which is Doist, Doist.com. There you can find, a bunch of our blog content about the, you know, our company culture and remote work best practices. But also, you know, if you're a productivity fan, you love using Todoist, we have a lot of productivity content there. And for Twist as well, if you're interested in learning more about like this asynchronous mindset, you can find all that on our website.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Brenna. Best of luck for you and the teams at Todoist. And this has been the Internet Marketing Podcast.
Thank you.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.